Isn't that cute? Isn't that the truth? All you need is love. Happy Valentine's Day, y'all. It is our Valentine's Day night program. Kathy does this. I just go along with it. You know, I just go along. I do what I'm told. But it is our Valentine's program. So what we're going to do tonight, all the bumper music that you'll hear will be have a love theme. Is that it, Madam Producer? She who rules.
You got a problem with that?
No. I mean, it just seems so incongruous. It really does. We're sitting here watching the opening ceremonies of the Olympics, and prior to that, the first showing of We Are the World 25, you know, 25 years after the fact. Can't believe that was 25 years ago. Oh, my God. But we're sitting here watching the opening of the Olympics and flipping around to some of the scenes from Vancouver. I had no idea. Oh, my God, what a beautiful place. And I knew it constantly was in the top 10 of the best places to live in the world, but I think now it's number one, isn't it? Yeah, it's a lot of cloudy, a lot of misty, but I don't know. Maybe it's time, Kathy. So anyway, for all you cynics out there and the ones in here, the bumper music tonight is all about romance. Is it about romance? Love? What kind of love? Erotic love? Agape?
All kinds?
Okay. Got an email right before the program from our education correspondent, Kay Petrini, out in California. And she says, "Hi, Mike. A couple of nights ago, you commented on the political and religious insanity in this country. You said, quote, 'This used to be, to some of us, a pretty good country. And to the rest of us, it seemed to be heading in the direction of becoming a pretty good country for everyone, for so-called minorities, for poor folk, for handicapped people. You know, we were working toward trying to float all the boats. We really were. We were making an effort. What happened?'" End quote. Malloy. So Kay writes, "Well, this morning in my government class, we read an excerpt from Alexis de Tocqueville's Democracy in America, written in 1831. Toward the end of the essay, Tocqueville wrote, quote, 'America, then, exhibits in her social state an extraordinary phenomenon. Men are there seen on a greater equality in point of fortune and intellect, or in other words, more equal in their strength than in any other country in the world, or in any age of which history has preserved the remembrance.'" End quote. Of course, we know that as he was making this assertion, de Tocqueville was fully aware of the most egregious contradiction to American equality, the enslavement of African Americans. That's why his closing statement is so striking. Quote, "It is impossible to believe that equality will not eventually find its way into the political world as it does everywhere else. To conceive of men remaining equal forever upon a single point, yet equal on all others, is impossible. They must come in the end to be equal upon all." End quote. In that last sentence, Kay writes, de Tocqueville recognized and gave voice to the potential contained in the documents that founded this nation. Based on what he observed nearly 200 years ago, he believed that America would one day fully realize the promise of the Enlightenment ideals upon which it was built. In fact, de Tocqueville believed that we were already on our way. So here we are in 2010. A time in which inequality continues to be the norm in the political system, while it rapidly returns to almost every facet of American society, education, economics, and even access to basic human rights like health care. Teaching a unit on progressivism in U.S. history this week has reminded me that at one time, things actually were heading in the right direction. You're absolutely right about that, Mike. I can't answer your question about what happened without going into an angry diatribe about recent history. But I think I can pinpoint when this downward spiral began. On or about January 20th, 1981. And it hasn't stopped since. Okay. Yeah. From our overseas correspondent, the court in Germany, one of the higher courts in Germany, has approved a neo-Nazi march through the city of Dresden to mark 65 years since the Allied bombing of that city. And according to our correspondent, thousands of far-right supporters are expected in Dresden tomorrow after a court authorized a neo-Nazi demonstration marking this anniversary. Opponents of the rally, a collection of politicians, artists, and unionists who formed the Dresden Without Nazis Alliance, called on the city's residents to stage a peaceful counter-protest and block the demonstration. One union leader said, quote, "Neo-Nazis aren't just a regional problem. The whole world is concerned," end quote. Fearing clashes, Dresden authorities also tried to block the rally, which police expect will draw at least 7,000 far-right supporters. Police officers plan to be out in force to prevent possible violence. And you may or may not know, we have started our assault on Fallujah. Okay, not Fallujah. Marja. Remember the assault on Fallujah in Iraq after it was determined by U.S. intelligence that the city of Fallujah in Iraq was a nest of people we wanted to kill. And so we isolated the city. We gave the residents a set amount of time to flee. And then the United States military attacked. And it's one of those little sidebars to the, even though it was a major confrontation, it has become a sidebar to our invasion and occupation and destruction of Iraq. And maybe at some point, maybe 30, 40, 50, 60 years from now, there will be a clear writing of what happened inside Fallujah. This is where we were using white phosphorus and all sorts of weaponry that was we were not supposed to use. Of course, people make the argument that, well, what about IEDs, Malloy? They're not supposed to be used either. Well, that I make the argument, what about, where do you draw the line in stopping an invading force? So, you know, we can go back and forth on that ad infinitum. But Marja, Afghanistan, helicopter-borne U.S. Marines and Afghan troops swooped down on this Taliban-held town of Marja before dawn on Saturday, launching a long-expected attack. This is the largest combat operation since Obama ordered 30,000 reinforcements to Afghanistan last December to turn the tide of the war. According to Major General Nick Carter, the commander of NATO forces in southern Afghanistan, 15 to 20,000 troops are involved, including some 7,500 troops fighting strictly in the town of Marja and British forces to the north. So on Valentine's Day weekend, we have been given notice that this huge assault in Afghanistan has begun. And I'm sure the casualty reports will start rolling in over the weekend. We'll be right back.
Day Cuddling with Mike Malloy.
The hour. What else we got? We're going to open up the phones real early tonight, since it is Friday. Also, podcast trivia coming back after the break at the bottom of this hour. Be about 13 minutes from now, where you can win a free one-year subscription to Malloy Show Download. Podcast downloads commercial-free. So get ready for that. This is from the state of Washington, Arlington, Washington. There's a student out there. He is a high school senior. He's the debate club president, top student. His name is Justin Serber. And he has studied the constitutional rights of free speech. He's 18 years old, and he recently did something that will keep his picture from appearing in his club, the debate club's yearbook photo. Once a week, this 18-year-old student wears a black T-shirt featuring the 19th-century philosopher Nietzsche's take on religion. In block letters, the shirt reads, "God is dead." Now, nobody has told him he can't wear the shirt to school. He says he wears it to provoke debate, and that's why he wore the shirt the day the debate club photo was taken for the yearbook. Well, now this young man believes his T-shirt is the reason the school's yearbook advisor asked for a retake of the photo without the T-shirt. Young Master Serber says, "I feel I'm a victim of censorship." Yes, you are, Justin. The yearbook staffer indicated she'd been asked by the yearbook advisor not to tell Serber the reason for the retake. Yeah, the so-called adult, the advisor, the yearbook advisor said, "Don't tell him. Just, you know." So in protest, young Master Serber and a friend of his, another member of the debate club, chose not to be in the second photo. The school district's lawyer advised school administrators that a student's First Amendment rights aren't violated if the yearbook staff decides not to run a photograph of that student. Okay. I guess that's true, isn't it? We don't want to run a photograph like that, so we won't. Suber, young Master Suber says he didn't want to create a personal problem with the yearbook advisor, and he decided to send a note to the principal and the vice principals. He said not one of them could even take the time to respond, to even tell me I should go talk to the yearbook advisor. I didn't ask the principal for action, as I didn't know what action could be actually taken. This isn't your everyday issue," end quote. By the way, Justin Serber has a cumulative grade point average of 3.85. He works 30 hours a week at a local fast food restaurant. His goal is to graduate from law school, enter the political arena. Justin Serber says he loves his school. He said, quote, "But I just can't sit back and let censorship happen. The yearbook is for students. I want to be remembered by my peers as someone who stood for what he believed in. Whatever happens with this, the process has been an education," end quote. And keep that with you, Justin. Take it from someone who graduated high school during the Paleolithic period. That would be me. That you're doing the right thing. You're doing absolutely the right thing. All right. We have a break coming, so now's the time to get online if you want to play trivia. The number is 877-996-2556. We will ask you a multiple choice question. And if you get it right, you'll win a free 1-year subscription to Malloy program downloads, podcast downloads. And for the older folks in the audience, you don't have to have an iPod to listen to a podcast download. You can listen to it right on your computer. No jokes. So now's the time to call 877-996-2556. We're going to take a break and we'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. SUV or a 1-year podcast subscription download thingy. What? Oh, we're out of the SUVs? Okay. Then we'll go to the second prize, which is a free 1-year subscription to Malloy Show Downloads podcast, commercial free. All I have to do is get the right answer to a multiple choice question. Let's start with Drew, who's in Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic. Hey, Drew.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right. We're snowed in down here.
Okay. Well, you can't complain to me about that.
I know. You folks up north think that 3-4 inches of snow is no big deal, but I'll tell you what, it has absolutely brought Atlanta to a stop.
that would make sense. You guys wouldn't have the resources to handle it. I could understand that.
Yeah. This is the truth. This is a metropolitan area of 5 million. We have one snowplow and 10 salt trucks. we don't even live in the city. I mean, we've just been watching the local news. We live out here in the foothills where forget about it. Oh, but never mind. I'm sorry. All right. Are you ready to play podcast trivia?
As ready as I'll ever be.
Okay. Here we go. What organization recently was charged with fraud for billing the government for strippers and prostitutes and submitting fraudulent invoices? Was it A, Halliburton, B, Tea Party Nation, C, the Christian Coalition, or D, Blackwater?
D.
D?
D as in dog.
Blackwater. You're absolutely right. Some nights these questions are really tough. But anyway, that's good. Drew, congratulations.
Thank you.
What I'll do here is put you on hold. Kathy would take the pertinent information and tell you how to get this.
Keep up the terrific work.
Well, thank you, and enjoy the podcast, right?
Yeah, the only bad thing about your show is that I listen to it all the time, and I love to read, so sometimes it cut into my reading time.
I hear you. That's right.
I just finished Game Change.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was a trip.
Yeah, I haven't. I'm still trying to read The Family. I'm still behind on that one. Well, with the podcast downloads now, you can listen anytime, and it doesn't interrupt your reading. I hear you. Thanks, Drew.
Thank you.
All right, stay on the line. Well then, yeah, it's difficult. A parallel process. You can't can't read and listen to a radio program. All right. If you are on hold and you are only there to play trivia, this would be a good time to bail out. If you're on hold and you have some comments to make, stick around. I'll get to your call momentarily. The New York Times today, I think it was today. Was it? Yeah, it was today. Has an article about the you know, that group of Baptists who went to Haiti from the Midwest, and apparently the legal advisor for this group, who are still sitting in jail unless they were freed today. This group of Baptists who tried to take 33 children out of Haiti without permission. The guy is Jorge Puello Anibal Torres. Let me see. Jorge Anibal Torres Puello. And he is wanted for sex trafficking. Oops! Really? El Salvadoran police are investigating Señor Puello. The presiding judge over the Haitian case said he also will begin an inquiry regarding Puello. One lawyer for the Idaho group of Baptists has already been dismissed after that lawyer was accused of offering bribes to get the Christians out of jail. This could cause some serious problems for these people from the Baptist church. Indeed. If Puello turns out to be the person who the authorities think he is, then the Christians may find themselves in deep, deep trouble. Mr. Puello is Jewish. The picture of him in the paper in the Times today showed him with his yarmulke. He is Puello wanted $36,000 more than he's already gotten from these American families that are being held there, these Christians. I think the Christians have paid him about $15,000 to represent them, and he's asking for $36,000 more. There are also discrepancies in how he gives his name. There's questions whether or not he really is the head of a Sephardic Jewish community. And the Sephardic documents found in a house in San Salvador, El Salvador, where traffickers had held women, is now under investigation. Jesus God. Now there's nothing definitive here. This could be somebody with the same name, right? Jorge Anibal Torres Puello. There could be two of them. It could be. Jorge Puello said a couple of days ago he'd never even been in El Salvador, and it was a case of mistaken identity. Puello said, quote, there's a Colombian drug dealer who was arrested with 25 IDs, and one of them had my name, end quote. Uh-huh. Commissioner Jorge Calejas, head of the Salvadoran Border Police, said that a man with a Dominican passport identifying him as Jorge Anibal Torres Puello led a human trafficking ring that recruited Dominican women and underage Nicaraguan girls by offering them jobs and then making them work as prostitutes in El Salvador. An Interpol arrest warrant has been issued for Jorge. There are also questions about whether this so-called advisor, Puello, is licensed to practice law anywhere, much less Haiti, where he says he's representing the Christians. The College of Lawyers in the Dominican Republic doesn't list him. Puello's alleged law office in Santo Domingo is too small to hold the 45 lawyers that Puello claims are members of his firm. Puello also said he was licensed in Florida, but there's no record there either. You see, once the cascade of lies begins, it's very difficult then, isn't it, to step back and say, well, okay, maybe it's a case of mistaken identity. He couldn't be the same guy. Eh? Especially when he's making claims that are easily verified. And the verification process turns up, whoops, no, that's not true. Whoops, no, that's not true either. Whoops, neither's that. Señor Puello. Señor Jorge Anibal Torres Puello. wanted for sex trafficking of young girls, now linked to the Baptists who are in jail in Haiti. It's just a goddamn circus, isn't it? Huh? We didn't know anything about it. I don't know whether I don't know what to feel about this case, because, well, yes, I do know what to feel about this case. I really do. It's one thing to want to go, and I think I said this when this story first developed. It's one thing to go to a country like Haiti where people are desperate for help and try to help. That's honorable. You go there, you acknowledge their laws, their customs, their culture, and help. How do you do that? Dig latrines. Offer to assist medical people to bathe wounded bodies. Take out the trash. Have a story hour for children who don't know if their parents are alive or not. There's all kinds of things you can do. But way down on that list is to round up 20 or 30 children and try to take them out of that country with no documentation and nobody's permission. And then to say to the authorities when you are caught, oh, well, we were just going to take them over here to the Dominican Republic and then come back and get the proper documents. Oh, really? Well, guess what? You made a big mistake, Baptists. So we'll see how it comes, all comes together, but this sordid little story is it just keeps getting hairier and hairier, doesn't it? And I just wonder to what extent, if any, the leaders of this Christian group, the two or three women who apparently are the leaders, if they're flying blind or if there is something ugly afoot here. And I would assume that some answers will start presenting themselves fairly quickly. But when you deal with someone like Jorge Aníbal Torres Puello, given his record or lack thereof, it seems to me you're asking for trouble.
Listening to America's Sweetheart, Mike Malloy.
America's Sweetheart? In a pig's navel. Oh, my God. Michael is in Spring Hill, Florida. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm all right.
Okay, talk to me.
All right. I've seen all these things for Help Haiti and such.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not against Help for Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
But the recession we're going through, we are spending so much money mm-hmm. on all other things besides improving our economic status in America. We are hitting rock bottom. Okay? And I see all these ads on TV to give money to other countries when we have poverty. In our own country, we have millions of people out of jobs,
mm-hmm.
and we are so focused on giving money to other countries when we need the money ourselves. We are in a recession. I don't seem to understand. I'm all for helping other countries.
Right.
But when our country is in need ourselves, don't you think we should give to our own people?
Well, I do, but all of our money is going into the pockets of the ultra wealthy in this country and into the military industrial complex. Barack Obama just submitted the new military budget to go kill people and break things up and establish American imperialism around the globe. And it's approaching $800 billion. You know, $200 billion more, you get to $1,000 billion and you're at a trillion. So $800 billion for war, death, and destruction. And then 1.6 or 6.1, pick a number, trillion to bail out the thugs on the upper levels of capitalist America that have stolen everything they could get their hands on, and then and also took the paintings off the walls, stole the ashtrays, all the dinnerware, they stole the carpets, they stole everything that wasn't nailed down, and the stuff that was nailed down, they got a crowbar and pried it up and took that too. So the point I'm trying to make, Michael, is a few million dollars to Haiti is nothing. It's not even a sneeze. It's not a hiccup. It's not a drop of sweat. It's nothing. It's absolutely nothing. I can understand your concern. I really can. And most of the money that's gone to Haiti has come via private donations where people would just, you know, text message okay, and then get an extra $10 on their Verizon bill or something the next next billing. I hear what you're saying, but
right.
Let's keep it focused. And this is hard to do. It's hard for me to do it. Let's keep it focused on where the real money drain is in this country. It's not in helping Haiti. It's in murdering hundreds of thousands of people for the past 8 years in the Middle East. It's the military-industrial complex. That's where it's going. So,
but is it not true that the reason why this war is a continuation of Desert Storm, and not even that, Saddam he violated his terms of surrender that were imposed in Desert Storm during the Clinton administration. And when Bush came into power, and we went to war, they denied a UN's weapons inspection.
Wait, Michael, no. No, none of that is true. I don't know where you got that information. The weapons inspectors, as long as you want to talk about Saddam in Iraq, the weapons inspectors were trying to do their job. George W. Bush and Dick Cheney told them to get out because we were about to attack Iraq. Saddam, as much of a tyrant as he was, he didn't violate any surrender agreement. He didn't do a thing except have the misfortune of, first of all, being a complete bastard and a dictator, and secondly, sitting on very easily accessible oil that the United States and the UK wanted, the oil companies in the US and the UK. Wait a minute, lost my train of thought here. I don't know where you were getting your information, but what you just said is not true. And don't forget, Saddam Hussein used to be a big ally of the United States. We prompted him to attack Iran back in the early 80s, during the bad old days of Ronald Reagan. We got him to attack Iran. As a result of that, a couple million people died in that conflict. So,
right.
No, so Saddam Hussein was just a punk, easily handled. I mean, Donald Rumsfeld handled him pretty well. When Rumsfeld was special envoy for Reagan, I believe. And the whole thing is, look, let me just say this, Michael, and then I got to move on. Anything that occurs in the Middle East is pretty much illusion. If we're told in this country by our media, our news media, that X, Y, and Z happened, immediately suspect it's a lie. If it turns out it's not a lie, then immediately suspect it's a mirage. If it turns out it's not a mirage, immediately suspect that what you just heard was gibberish coming from somebody who doesn't have a clue what's really going on. That's the best I can tell you, pal. All right?
Okay.
All right, Michael, thanks. I appreciate you checking in, and I appreciate your fact that you're trying to straighten things out. It is extremely difficult to do, Michael, but an awful lot of right-wing rhetoric in this country has to do with, you know, what you just said. And I would imagine that what has happened, you've been caught in a crossfire where, you know, that stuff has penetrated your mind. And it's all not true. Good luck with cleaning out your head, pal. All right, we'll be back. Excuse me, after this break. Stick around. If you're on hold, we're going to come to you as soon as the break is over. We do have another moment with Bob. Can you believe that? After he said, I'm not doing it anymore. Well, he did. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour. Welcome back. This is the Malloy Show. It is our thanks. thanks. Sorry. It is our Valentine's evening show here on the night that the Vancouver Olympics, the opening ceremonies are still in full play. You can watch it if you want to. You know, listen to the program and watch it if you like. All right. We have another moment with Bob, but I think I'll wait until the bottom of this hour, and then we'll do it. He, a couple of months ago, he said that he'd pretty much run out of things to say. And so therefore, you know, the best thing to do when you have nothing to say is don't say anything, right? But apparently Bob found a couple more things because he sent us something, what, Kathy, about a month ago that we read. And then we have one for tonight. So stick around for that. Tobias is in Lincoln, Nebraska, listening on XM. Hey, Tobias.
Hello, Mike. I just want to respond to your first caller about the economic aid to Haiti.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the fact that he compared our suffering to their suffering, I find that incredibly offensive. I mean, they literally do not have a roof over their heads. They mm-hmm. don't have food to eat. And they're saying that, no, we should keep this stuff for ourselves. We shouldn't give it to them because we're having suffering that is minuscule compared to what they're going through. I mean,
well,
talk about entitlement.
Yeah, I hear you, but do you understand that the frustration? You know, we don't know too much about the guy that called from Spring Hill, Florida, except I'd be willing to bet that he's probably, I don't know if he's married, has a family, or has a significant other or what, but he might be struggling. Maybe he can't find work. I've been in Spring Hill, Florida many times. There's nothing there. It's just Highway 19. It's just, strip mall after strip mall and subdivision after subdivision. There's nothing there. So I don't know, if he lives there or he's just passing through. It's a good place to pass through, frankly. But, So I, and listening to him though, don't you get the sense that he is feeling really frustrated? Because I'll bet you if the guy had a job and had the bills paid reasonably on time, I bet you he would have no problem contributing $5-$10 to Haiti relief. And that's all it takes, you know, for everybody to kick in $5 or $10. Oh my God, you got a mountain of money, right? Don't you think?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but still, I mean, I assume he's suffering. If he is, I mean, I still think he has a roof over his head and he pretty much has his basic needs covered. And it would just be nice if people, even when they're suffering, would still realize that there are places that are a lot poorer than America and that people are going through things that we pretty much never go through.
Well, what I hear you saying is that no matter how bad things get here, it's still here. Right?
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, like, we're still a first world country. We still have a standard of living well above what the majority of the rest of the world has.
Well, how are things going for you, Tobias? Do you have a job? Do you have a house you're paying on? What's happening?
Well, I have a low-paying job that I had to take. I would like to make more money, and I'm living with my family right now to save on rent. So, I mean, but I'm still pretty secure myself. I mean, I'm not really hurting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If I could ask you something really personal, have you contributed anything to Haiti relief?
Yeah, I have, but not much, like maybe $20.
Well, that's all it takes. I mean, you know, if you get 10 million people sending $20 a piece, that's an awful lot of money for Haiti, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I just that made me kind of angry just to see some people. I mean, I've seen this a lot with right-wingers as they just figure, oh, we're suffering, so therefore we're the worst off. I mean, there's...
I think it's pretty obvious that you have compassion for people who find themselves the victims of a hurricane or an earthquake or a tidal wave. It's good. It's good to have that kind of compassion. And I guess the only thing, the next step up would be to have empathy for somebody like the caller from Spring Hill who just is having a hard time. But I hear you. I hear you loud and clear, Tobias. Thanks a lot for checking it. Don't be a stranger. Call once in a while, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, man. Appreciate it. Gary is in Lexington, Kentucky, listening on XM. Hey, Gary.
Hey, Mike. I'm delighted that I was able to get through to you and that I was actually able to hold on long enough to hear you ask me to talk.
Well,
I see you every night.
Well, thank you.
Enjoy your show.
Thanks.
You said something earlier that I just wanted to bring to your attention.
Okay.
And talking to the caller who was complaining about the aid to Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
You made reference to the last 8 years of the mayhem that's going on in Iraq,
right,
and Afghanistan. You know, and I have been an ardent supporter of Obama.
Mm-hmm.
First time in my life I ever gave money to a campaign was his campaign. But, you know, I'm at the point right now where instead of talking about the last 8 years, let's call it what it is. It's the last 9 years now, because it really hasn't been that much of a sea change. At least that I was expecting when I voted for him.
Well, but let me ask you this. If we want to get really, really, really down on this topic, then we have to do what my education correspondent recommended tonight. I don't know if you heard the first part of the program. She's a school teacher in San Francisco, and she handles education affairs for us and writes to us and blogs. And she said, if you really want to date the when America started to really lose its way here in the modern era, you have to go back to January 20th, 1981, which would be roughly the day that Ronald Reagan was sworn in. So as far as Obama is concerned, when you have had 30 years of mismanagement of this economy by three Republicans and one Democrat, You've had 30 years of mismanagement. You've had 30 years of foreign policy that has just absolutely been horrendous. You have a situation developing of global climate change that most of us just don't want to address because it's too scary. When you have all this going on, and all of a sudden you get this 45-year-old guy from Chicago who becomes president, and I mean, I'm not cutting him any slack either. Don't get me wrong. I think a lot of what he's done is just the opposite of why I voted for him. I don't think he has fulfilled the expectation that he brought up in a lot of us. I mean, we got to be very careful here. Obama didn't promise squat. I mean, there were some things he promised, but he didn't promise these big overarching ideas that liberals or progressives like me insisted he did promise. No, he didn't. He just didn't promise it at all. So I kind of hesitate to dump 30 years of mismanagement of this country onto some young guy who's had 1 year in the Oval Office, except for what he's responsible for. He's not responsible for any of this stuff. He didn't do any of this. He's not responsible for any of it. Now, his attempt to solve things, you and I might disagree with. Throwing money at Wall Street and saying those multi-million dollar bonuses are understandable and garbage like that. I mean, we may disagree with his plans to try to straighten things out, but we can't blame him for a damn thing. He hasn't done anything. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, Mike.
Okay.
You know, I'm thinking about the datum that you mentioned earlier about the $800 billion defense budget. You know, that's the biggest I think we've ever had, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is.
The direction we will still want to be going in, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that progressive?
No, that's regressive. It's horrible. Hey, Gary, I got to leave it there, pal. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you checking in. I hear what you're saying, man. I really do.
Yet tonight, how much he loves these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Bob Alexander's moment coming up after the next break. Don is in Vancouver, British Columbia. Hey, Don.
Hey, bonjour, Michael.
Bonjour, monsieur. Boy, you know, I've been seeing a lot of video of Vancouver in the past few days. It's astonishingly beautiful up there.
Yes, yes, it is a very beautiful area. But I was curious if you guys had Molly in front of the tube right now with a Coca-Cola and a McDonald's in her hand while she's watching the Olympics.
No, it's 10:22 in the evening here. Molly's been asleep for about 2 hours.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure she's doing her patriotic thing.
No, we'll break all of her fingers before we let her drink Coca-Cola.
Well, I just wanted to comment.
Or Pepsi Cola, or any cola, as a matter of fact, or McDonald's. We don't do McDonald's. We've got our 5.5-year-old convinced that if you go to McDonald's and buy food, you will get sick and eventually you'll die way before you're supposed to. Now, that was very easy to do. And this is the truth. I swear to you, this is the truth. This child has never been inside a McDonald's. And as long as we can, you know, keep that from happening, we will.
Well, that's a good thing, because here it's just, on the streets, it's just Coca-Cola plastered everywhere and McDonald's plastered everywhere. It's just such a contradiction. And
it is. You got Olympic athletes there, and these two companies are trying to sell you stuff that will just devour your internal organs.
Correct.
And make you crazy too. You know.
I was just going to comment. It's just kind of sad. You know, you'll see stuff on TV how everybody's getting into it up here, but you know, everybody is dreading it because the roads are shut down. Nobody can take part. The cheapest tickets, if you could get them, and nobody could, to the opening ceremonies tonight is $175. Mm. I mean,
well,
what common man can afford that?
Yeah, we went through that here in Atlanta in 1996, the Olympics. As a matter of fact, we were living, Kathy and I were living together. We weren't married at the time. We were living together in Atlanta, and well, suburb of Atlanta, Decatur, and the torch went right in front of our house. And I know from that madness, it is crazy. We did not attend any of the events either. We went down to Olympic Park, which is what it was called then, and hung out, and we watched the games on television. But hell no, you couldn't get any tickets.
Now, what I'm curious about, was Atlanta as bad as up here where it was a police state? I mean, around every venue, there are these fences that are at least 15 feet tall, and they just, police have been shipped in from all across the country.
Don't forget, we had the Olympic bomber here. Our security was not all that good, but downtown Atlanta looked like some cheesy midway from some traveling carnival. It was pretty bad. Atlanta was just not ready, even though the city had like 10 years notice or 8 years notice to get ready. They just weren't ready. Wait.
And I have to tell you, it was just humiliating to me being from this state, watching the opening ceremonies with the monster trucks and all these other tributes to everything redneck. And you just knew the world was scratching their heads and saying, you know, why did Gomer Pyle throw an Olympic ceremony? I mean, it was embarrassing. It was really humiliating. I was cringing the entire time.
I just I got a bit sad this morning watching the tube.
Izzy, Izzy, remember Izzy? Izzy was a weird bug mascot. Nobody knew what the hell it was. That's the best we could come up with as an Olympic mascot. Nobody could figure out what to name it, so they just said, "What is it?" Literally, and called it Izzy. That's how stupid we were.
Well, I found it interesting that, you know, the governor was up here doing the torch relay today, and it just seems like he's got bigger issues to worry about down south. I don't quite get that.
Well, maybe he was just trying to escape. You know, Arnold Schwarzenegger was a big-time Hollywood actor, and all of a sudden he decided, you know, his ego got the best of him, and now I bet he wishes he was still back making making Terminator movies. So I'm sure Arnold's trip to Vancouver was just to get the hell out of town for a while.
Yeah.
Oh, well. All right, Don, thanks.
Thank you, guys.
All right, appreciate you checking in. Take care. You were one of the volunteers, remember?
No. I was almost a volunteer when I found out what they expected us to do, and it was a volunteer thing. We were supposed to be audience leaders or something, and first off, they had us dressing up in these insanely hot outfits, and it was 120 degrees that summer or something, and they had us in these long khaki pants and long-sleeved shirts, and I thought I was going to die. I had like one day of near heat stroke in practice at the new Turner Field, and I said, that's it. That's it.
I remember that day you came home and said, no, I'm sorry, it's not worth this. We'll be right back. Moment with Bob coming. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Love stinks.
is a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him kissable. It's More Mike Malloy.
Oh, my God. It's about 25 before the hour. This is pretty incredible visuals, the opening ceremonies of the Olympics in Vancouver, which we're watching as we do the program tonight. Really astonishing stuff. And so much of it focused on the attempt by humans to be in harmony with this harsh environment of the northern reaches of Canada, some of which goes, of course, beyond the Arctic Circle. And the influence of the pagan beliefs the indigenous people brought to anyone who wants to take them, but to look at the connection, the symbolic, this is television, I understand, but the symbolic connection between the people and the environment that they live in. This is pretty beautiful stuff. It's all being done in blues and whites and sparkles, and there's some red, but I was watching it during the break and reminded myself that tonight also, or today, I guess it's daylight in Afghanistan, we're killing and being killed for no real reason other than to gain access to natural gas and oil. Okay. I think we have some music. Do I hear music? Ah, there it is. Ukulele music. That could only mean either we're in Hawaii or it's another moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Tonight's title, Where We Live. Hey, Mike. I was watching the news, quote, the other morning when I heard someone say, I love my country. I put my coffee cup down and yelled at the guy on the television, you have got to stop hallucinating. Is there anything more trite than to tell a returning vet, thank you for your service? If there is anything more trite than that, it's got to be, I love my country. No, I'm not grateful to someone for participating in a war crime, and for the life of me, I can't figure out what America has ever done that could be termed lovable, as in, I love my country. And if you can find something even remotely decent this country has ever done, it is completely wiped off the morality ledger books by the atrocities this country has committed and continues to commit daily. The United States has never in its history intervened to stop genocide, and has, in fact, rarely even made a point of condemning it as it occurred. The world's longest Holocaust in the history of mankind took place in this country between 10 and 114 million American Indians were killed as a direct result of U.S. actions. According to the 1860 census, there were 4 million slaves in the United States. Through genocide and slavery, the empire was born. Since 1945, the government of the United States has waged 9 wars, overthrown 50 governments, crushed 30 liberation movements, intervened militarily in 70 nations, assassinated scores of prominent foreign citizens, and has condoned and used torture abroad and at home. How many people has America killed? That number cannot be counted. Too many millions have been murdered. Almost 5.5 million Vietnamese were killed during the illegal war in Vietnam. 1.2 million Iraqis have been killed since the U.S. invasion and occupation. How much higher could the death toll rise if we could accurately add the death resulting from our involvement in Mexico and the countries of Central and South America? This is our country. But there have been moments when progressives fought for a better nation, and though constantly opposed by conservatives, tried to realize a better America for us all. They abolished slavery and Jim Crow laws. Their efforts brought us women's suffrage, black suffrage, civil rights, health care, Social Security, the GI Bill, public schools, national parks, the 40-hour work week, child labor laws, minimum wage, and the Equal Rights Act. But these victories had been almost completely eliminated over the past 30 years. The right to vote was taken away from thousands of African Americans in Florida in the 2000 presidential election, and ultimately everyone's right to vote was nullified by the United States Supreme Court on 12 December 2000. Child labor laws, the minimum wage, and a 40-hour work week are meaningless concepts when U.S. corporations establish their sweatshops in third world countries. The Bush and Obama administrations have orchestrated the largest transfer of wealth in human history to the corporatocracy, while funding for schools, parks, and our nation's infrastructure is in shambles as budgets are cut across the board because of huge, paralyzing, mounting deficits. The two-party system, the three branches of the federal government, are completely corrupt. There's only a handful of decent members from the House and Senate, a few justices on the Supreme Court, and that's it. The rest are a bunch of swine who do the bidding of the highest bidder. I've yet to find the right word to describe politicians. What's the word that means a parasite who lives off of a leech? Democrats did nothing substantive to stop the Bush administration's war crimes and continue to follow the Bush-Cheney policies of illegal wars and occupations. The Democrats could stop Republican obstructionism, but do not. They could have stopped the Republican agenda years ago, but they didn't. The only conclusion I can come to is that the Democrats share the same goals as the Republicans. Take the money, do what you're told. The myth of the United States we've all been taught since kindergarten bears no resemblance to the country we actually live in. Activists like Howard Zinn did not work to restore the country to the myth, but rather worked to change the country according to the ideas set forth in our founding documents. We can't restore the country to the state it never was. We can only work to change it to what it might be. And the odds that working within the system will change the country for the better are right around zero. So yeah, I'm not an America lover. I don't know what loving America even means. Unless you're talking about geography. The Grand Canyon's pretty cool. But I'm pretty sure the people that say, I love my country, are talking about something other than the dirt. I'm an America hater. I hate what it's done and what it does. I can't celebrate national holidays because how exactly does one celebrate invasion, genocide, and worldwide looting? I'm against this country's policies of perpetual war in pursuit of peace. I'm against capitalism. I believe Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. when he said, quote, the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government, end quote. I advocate the nonviolent overthrow of the government, but I don't do anything about it. I'm pretty sure that's what's being called a terrorist these days. Plus, it's kind of iffy that the new government would follow the Constitution. I'm neither a radical nor a revolutionary. I have no solutions. The bad guys have won, and now the only question is to adapt or leave. I guess the third choice would be to embrace denial, to spend a huge amount of time and energy unknowing things, forgetting. But how much television can one watch? I've been told that I'm just quitting. Is it quitting to leave the casino after you've discovered the roulette table's rigged or the cards are stacked against you? Is it quitting not to go into battle hopelessly outnumbered and outgunned? The corporatocracy does lose every now and again. The Vietnamese spent millions of their lives getting rid of the invaders. I'm not ready to make that kind of sacrifice. I don't know anybody who is. The men who signed the Declaration of Independence were willing to risk their lives. I'm not. Which brings me back to adapt or leave. Regards, Bob. Another Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Well then, back to your phone calls. John is in L.A. listening on KTLK. Hey, John.
Hey. Apologize to everyone for being 1 hour retarded to your show.
For being what?
one-hour retarded.
Oh, that's it. That's okay. I understand they moved us to an hour delayed at KTLK, which is all right, you know.
Well, I may be betraying my ignorance of what's gone on before your show, but I would like to mention that this Tea Party issue, they're talking about, Republicans infiltrating at Wolves in Sheep's Clothing, whatever they were saying today.
Uh-huh.
I do believe that that, to a degree, could be occurring. I also, however, think that in a greater extent, the whole Tea Party thing is a great big sandbag to any possible third party in this country.
Hey, John, let me put you on hold. I'll come back to you. I got to do a break. I'll come right back, okay?
Yeah.
All right, stay right there. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. We had a love, a love, a love you don't find every day. A love you don't find. So don't let it slip away, away. I said, baby, 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 I'm begging you, please. I'm begging you, please.
Conservatives love to snuggle. It's Mike Malloy.
Hey! 10 before the hour. This is our Valentine program. That's why the liners seem a little off kilter. All right, we were talking with John and Ella in LA, listening on KTLK. Where were we, John? Go ahead.
Oh, just saying that the that whole Tea Party is probably one big sandbagging of any realistic third party in this country. You notice how the commercial media, the corporate media, gives so much time to the Tea Party and ends up ridiculing them. And I just think it puts bad light on all of them. I mean, you don't hear from the Greens. You don't hear from the Peace and Freedom Party. You do hear a little bit. You do hear a little bit about the National Socialist Party in the commercial media the other week, because they, you know, they were sponsoring a freeway, part of a freeway cleanup sign or something.
You're talking you're talking about the American Nazi Party.
Right. And another way to give socialists a bad name.
Right.
But anyway, the one other comment I wanted to make, aside from that sandbag party, was the whole healthcare name of single payer is, I think, misleading from at the very beginning, because I do not believe that it was ever meant for the government to be the only payer. I don't think it was meant for the government to be a full monopoly. Some people think that Medicare is an example of single payer. It's not. And maybe the nomenclature needs to be changed if we're going to have a proper debate in this country for health care.
Well, you've made a lot of points. I don't think anyone has... anyone with any sense has declared that Medicare is an example of single payer, because it's not.
Oh, really?
Medicare does not cover everybody's medical costs. As a matter of fact, it covers a percentage. And the person who does.
Well, one of the talk show hostesses mentioned that.
Yeah. Well, it's not. By definition, it's not. I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not really trying to argue with anybody. It's just by definition, it's not single payer. It means just that. So there is one entity that pays for medical care. In Medicare, you have the Medicare payment, but then you have the balance that has to come either from the insured person or from supplementary insurance, which drags in maybe another one or two or three. So, yeah, it's not single payer. As far as the Tea Party movement, you know, I see media bending over backwards trying to be fair and saying, well, it's a bunch of frustration that's showing itself and people don't know what to do. To that, I say hog snot. The Tea Party movement is a collection of half-witted jackasses that couldn't find their asses with both hands. They're being manipulated by these freaks in talk radio and television, these multimillionaires who love playing these poor, miserable bastards. They've given them the name Teabaggers. They're nothing more than misdirected freaks who are sucking at the government teat every chance they can get, everything they can get their goddamn hands on. But what has them motivated, the motivating factor behind the teabag movement, is they are racist bastards. That's all. That is the underlying theme. They are, and I don't, you know, they can deny that until hell freezes over. I really don't care. They are racist. Purely and simply. And they can't stand the idea that there's a person who's not completely white in the White House. And that's what's frosting their collective well-padded asses, is that they just can't get over that. These people are no more interested in the Constitution and freedom and liberty and justice than they're interested in having their eyes ripped out. They're being manipulated. They're a bunch of, it's like a herd of cows. You watch these people, and I say milk them for all they're worth. If Sarah Palin can make $10 million off these pigs, go for it, you crazy broad. If Beck can make millions off these pigs, go for it, you psychopath. I mean, just, you know, pound it to them. Just take them for everything they've got. Leave them crying by the side of the road. That's what they deserve. The teabag cretins are, that is not a political movement. It is a collection of losers of the highest order. They wouldn't know the first thing about organizing not just a tea party. They wouldn't know how to organize their goddamn sock drawer. These people are so out of touch with reality as to render their whole movement kind of like a movement you might find in a public bathroom. They are a bunch of jerks. So I wouldn't give them any kind of legitimacy whatsoever, John. They and the only reason television goes to them is because it is a freak show. Everybody knows. You know, I still have friends at CNN. We talk. The only reason CNN devotes any time to Sarah Palin is because she's a goddamn freak. She might as well be a two-headed horse that with the body of a gorilla. I mean, she's a freak. And that's the reason they go for it. They know she's dumber than dog snot. That and the fact that corporate media wants to keep you entertained while they make you forget. So, how's that? Don't worry about this collection of half-wits that Glenn Beck labeled teabaggers or whatever the hell they are. You know, Beck and Hannity and Palin and the rest of these animals have found a way to, like so many people in the history of this country have found a way to fleece the sheep. And, you know, fleece them. Take them for all they're worth. Go ahead. That's what you people are about. And the fleecies, I think they kind of like it, you know. They're getting some attention. They're getting their ugly asses on television. So, and they're willing to pay for that. So, whatever. Whatever. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
time, baby. Love me twice today. Love me two time, girl. I'm gone away. Love me two time, girl. One for tomorrow, one just for today. Love me two time. I'm gone away.
Welcome back, 7 past the hour. It's the Malloy Show on Thanksgiving Eve Eve. I keep saying Thanksgiving. I guess I'm just thankful all the time. On Valentine's Day. Well, they sound alike. Thanksgiving, Valentine's, you know. Valentine's Eve Eve. Whoops, what was that? Valentine's Eve Eve program. That's the reason for the schmaltzy music that we're playing tonight. All right? We'll be back to our regular nasty, abrasive self Monday. Scott is in Columbus, Ohio, listening online. Hey, Scott.
Hey, good evening, Mike. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good.
Hey, I'd like to just begin by flashing back to the night after the 2004 elections.
Mm-hmm.
I remember listening online when you came on the air. Basically, the first thing that you had said was, you know, well, folks, it's time for us to roll up our sleeves and, you know, not just work for the next election cycle, but for the next 20 years.
Mm.
And I think that as disheartened or maybe even as negative as we may be about what's been happening even just this last year,
mm-hmm.
I think that that still rings true today. I mean, we can't just expect to win, you know, one or two election cycles and then, you know, everything is going to be honky-dory.
Right.
You know, there's another election coming up in November and then two more years and two more years. You know, just keep at it. The worst thing that we could do as liberals, as progressives, is, you know, just to give up because things don't, you know, aren't going as fast as we would like them to go. You know, we can't just give in. We have to continue to fight because, you know, the object is to overall just crush the opponent. We want to crush conservatism. We don't want to blend with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the fact that we may have, quote-unquote, had 60 in the Democratic caucus in the Senate, which, of course, we never really had, but, you know, that can't be the end game. We need 70 or 80 or 90. You know, so that's really the object, is that's where we want to get to. And, you know, as frustrated as I am, I know you are, and, you know, all the listeners, we can never, ever, ever just concede and say, okay, you know, I don't like what the president's been doing or I don't like what's been going on. You know, just continue to fight because that's what we need to do.
Well, I agree with you, but I don't think all this energy should be poured into the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is dead.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few people in the Democratic Party who, given a chance to get out of it and move into a different political structure, probably would. Having made that declaration, I agree with you that a progressive movement, liberal movement, progressive movement, it requires a lot of energy. It requires a dedication. The thing is, it's got to be multi-generational. That's exactly what happened. You know, this modern conservative movement started in 1964 when Lyndon Johnson crushed Barry Goldwater and the John Birch Society and all those crazy bastards that thought that they were going to arise out of the 50s Red Scare and Joe McCarthyism and all this other stuff, and that they were going to take over the country. And they were beaten so badly by Barry Goldwater was beaten so badly by Lyndon Johnson that it almost ended permanently the Republican Party. It almost looked like they were going to have to come up with a different party and,
right,
and name it something different because the defeat was so all encompassing. Well, that's not what happened, and much to the destruction of our society, the Republicans didn't die. What they did was to retrench and come up with plans, 10-year plan, just like the Soviets, 10-year plan, 15-year plan, 20-year plan, 25-year plan. They also gave up on media at the time. Media was liberal. It was progressive. It was intelligent. It was a fact-finding. It did expose. It was what it was chartered by the Constitution to be, a necessary tool to maintain freedom in the society. So the Republicans knew they had to build a parallel universe. And that's exactly what they did.
Right.
They got all the wealthy Republicans together. They put together think tanks. They put together that were not think tanks. They were just fronts, like front organizations. But they came up with a lot of money to pay right wing people from the academy, right wing people from business, right wing people from the military. They ginned up the Red Scare. They convinced Lyndon Johnson to assign off on this phony Gulf of Tonkin thing, and yada, 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 yada. So all I'm trying to say is 1964 was how long ago? It was, 50. How long ago was it? 1964.
46.
Come on, 46 years ago, right. So that is easy. Two generations plus the generation that got it rolling. So you're talking three generations dedicated themselves to destroying America, and they have done it.
Right.
They have absolutely destroyed it.
Right.
Now, I say the last act of their destructive dance should be, what happened in Massachusetts? The only reason Brown won is because so many Democrats said to hell with it, just to hell with it, and stayed home and didn't go.
That's right.
So I think it's time for all Democrats to do that. I think all Democrats, because the Democratic Party is not responsive to us anymore. We don't have it. I don't know about you, but the Democratic Party has nothing for me. I busted my ass all my life for the Democratic Party. I was thrilled with Barack Obama. Even though I knew, fingers in the wind, I knew nothing was going to happen because of what Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid refused to do. So,
right.
bottom line, it's time to abandon the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. They're a bunch of con artists, liars, thieves, knaves, highwaymen, and losers.
Right.
And to work, and I think this is what you're talking about, work for a progressive party that is based on survival of the planet. It's based on ending predatory capitalism. It's based on liberty, equality, and fraternity. There's a wonderful idea. And not based on who's got the most, how much greed can I have, when's Jesus coming back, I'm ready to rapture, all
right.
this other horse snot.
Right.
So that's a hell of a job. Now, let me wind up by saying I'm too old to do it. I am not going to do anything to make that movement start, except perhaps give it some airtime if it does get going. I'm tired, man. I busted my ass for 40 years in the movement, and we never were able to get the kind of funding. After all, we live in America. We live in a capitalist society. You've got to have money. Money talks. The other stuff walks. And we tried and tried and tried. So I hope the new generation. Now that we have this wonderful tool, the internet, the World Wide Web, maybe that will be the offsetting device to the money that is needed to set up organizations, think tanks, publications, underground newspapers, all the stuff that is necessary to interconnect until the day comes when we can burst out of the cocoon and just say, we're here, this is a progressive movement, and then line up all the Republicans and shoot them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that on the internet. I think that is just such a going to be a great tool,
right,
for the progressive movement. And,
yeah.
Maybe we're just a little bit different on semantics, or maybe it is truly a little bit of a difference between us, but it's just about the process of how we get to where we need to go.
Mm-hmm.
I still think that the majority of the Democratic Party, including our representatives and, the tens of millions of us who are citizens of this country,
mm-hmm.
Really are still good Democrats. We're being held up by, a few in the House and the Senate, and our Harry Reid has just, unfortunately, he may be a terrifically nice man, but as a leader, he hasn't done what he needs to do, which is to be as partisan as possible.
Well, his heart's not in it. How can you try to advance a progressive agenda when you're not progressive? I mean, Harry Reid is a mossback Republican light who should go back to, working within the confines of his church, where I'm sure he's very effective. But he's not a progressive. Neither is Nancy Pelosi. So, you can't have a progressive movement building unless you have progressives leading it. Hey, I got to leave it there. Scott, good to hear from you. Thank you so much. I hope you call again. Take care.
A conservative today? Pucker up. It's more Mike Malloy. Can't be done.
Nothing you can sing that can't be sung. Nothing you can say that you can learn how to play the game. It's easy. Nothing you can make that can't be made. No one you can save that can't be saved.
It's about 22 past the hour. Kissed a conservative today? Jesus, God, Kathy. Bill is in Mound, Minnesota, listening on KTNF. Hey, Bill.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
I'm so glad I got through to you. Ever since the Blue State Bash, when I met you, I showed you a picture of me sitting on a killing machine, a piece of artillery. And
yeah.
I had that in my pocket. I was showing it to, I work one county over from Bachman.
Oh my God.
And, there's a lot of Republicans over here, and I was showing them because, they're all chicken hawks.
Mm-hmm.
And I do wind up getting into discussions with them. And, this has been bothering me ever since I saw you at the Blue State. I'm that bowling machine mechanic, remember?
Oh, yeah. I remember,
oh,
sure.
Okay. I don't know why I showed that to you, because you looked at it and I thought, on my way home, I said, why the hell did you do that? I'm not proud to be a Vietnam vet. When somebody tells me thank you for your service, I politely say, thank you, but no thank you, because I am not proud to be a Vietnam vet.
Well, it was one of those moments, one of those periods in your life, I'm sure, Bill. Had I ever been in the combat, I would probably want to show somebody a picture of me around that period of time, too. I mean, you can't escape. It's part of your life. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I understand that, but the thing is, I'm calling for my own sake because it's been bothering me. I think it's even affected my sleep, because I'm so against these proxy wars. Continuous, as you've stated so many times,
mm-hmm.
and war profiteers, I hate them with a passion.
Sure. Sure.
I relieved my feelings, my whatever, by at least talking to you. You probably forgot all about it, but I didn't.
No, I didn't forget it at all. I certainly didn't think when you showed it to me, like, what's up with this guy? I didn't. It's part of. Part of the experience of your life, the fact that you were there, the fact that you understand why you were there, and the fact that you recognize that for a period of time you were part of the machine, and there was nothing you could do about it unless you wanted to kill yourself. I mean,
well,
what are you going to do?
Exactly. Being an artillery, I will never know how many Indochinese I participated in killing. Innocent people.
Maybe none.
No. We killed a lot, but there's nothing I can do about it. And as you said, it's part of my life. And you got other callers. I'm going to move on. And now at least I got to put my soul to rest.
Well, if just talking to me, explaining that, you didn't have to do that, Bill. I certainly understand. I mean, I met you. I could tell that you're not some raving killer. And again, one thing about being an artilleryman, you get the coordinates on your target. But you know that was the Vietnam War. There were no rigid battle lines. There were no fronts, so to speak. And I'm not trying to impugn the targeting ability of your team, but you don't know if you hit anybody.
No. We had an aerial observer, so we knew when we had confirmed kill. And at the time, you know, I was convinced that I was stopping communism. You know, I was brainwashed. Right. I came out of the ether many, many years ago.
Well, was there only one gun in your unit?
Oh no. A battery consists of seven. I was in fire direction control, so I actually plotted the data for the guns to shoot in the deflection and azimuth. Those guns would shoot up to 11 miles.
Mm-hmm. Again, even though you had aerial observers who were telling you guys what you'd hit and what you hadn't hit, and move a little bit this way, move a little bit that way, with a 7-gun battery, you just never know. That's all. Bill, thanks.
Yes.
Thanks for checking. I hope you'll call me again.
Well, thank you very much, Mike.
All right, man. Take care.
Okay, you too.
All right. For the hour. Phone number here is 877-996-2556. Back to your calls. Matthew is in Scranton, PA, listening on Sirius. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Pretty good.
Hey, I was just dialogue at 11 o'clock, and there's several things I really disagree upon. You mentioned that we never stepped in to prevent any genocide.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, World War II, we stepped in. Been the genocide of Jews. Yugoslavia, we stepped in.
No, wait. One at a time. We did not step in to stop the genocide of the Jews. We did not. No, wait. You're, first of all, your cell phone's breaking up. But we did not. We were asked to bomb the rail lines that were taking the Jews into the death camps, and we refused. So no, that is a wrong answer for you to say that we stepped in to stop the genocide of the Jews. Now, what was the other one?
Okay, I mean, if we could continue on World War II, you could debate about D-Day. We went in there D-Day, came in there, liberated France, and
okay,
part of the main
The issue that Bob wrote about was genocide. We did not stop the slaughter of Frenchmen. There was no genocide. There was a war. No, wait. You know, I'll give you all the time you want, but A, don't try to overtalk me. And when you make a statement that I find egregiously wrong, I will correct it. And that leaves you a choice. You can say to hell with him and hang up, or you can accept the fact that, historically, you've just got it wrong. I mean, I'm not looking to pick a fight with you, Matthew, but I am not going to allow stuff go on this program that's not true. It's that simple.
All right, then can you explain, Yugoslavia, for instance, the genocide going on there.
Slow down. What genocide? When?
In the early 90s, when Yugoslavia broke up, the Bosnian War.
Who was the recipient of the genocide?
Milosevic.
No. Who was the recipient of the genocide?
It was either the Serbs were committing genocide upon the I can't think of the culture, the name of the
Kosovars, the Muslims. Who? Look, I disagree with you, Matthew, just totally that what was going on in Yugoslavia was genocide. There was that country was breaking up ever since the death of Tito. Without this kind of iron-fisted leader, the country broke up into its disparate parts. There never was a country called Yugoslavia, not until the end of World War I. It was a construct. It was something that was put together. And I don't think it was genocide. There certainly have been genocides. I mean, the definition of genocide is the complete murder of every member of a genus, a group, an entire society. I appreciate you checking in, Matthew, but we can just go round and round here about these definitions, and it's just not good radio, pal. I'm sorry. It really is not good radio. John is in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, Mike. Hey. Could I do a very quick only in Arkansas story?
Sure, absolutely.
One of the few remaining industries we have left here, Bill's War Goods. One of our big bullet manufacturing companies just got a big contract to do ecologically friendly 50 caliber bullets.
Those are ones without the DU in casing, the depleted uranium casing?
Right.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
But anyhow, just the concept of ecologically friendly 50 caliber bullets.
Right. Oh, my God.
And the second thing is, I've had a lot of people ask me, there's a big spirit here in Arkansas, throw all the bums out.
Yeah.
And I keep telling people, well, there are still a few good people left in Washington
right.
that you don't want to throw out. And they say, well, how do you tell the difference? And I say, well, anybody that's a free trader, vote them out of office. And it's kind of a rough cut rule of thumb, but it'll work most of the time.
Well, someone who's a fair trader might be worth trying to salvage. But you're right. Free trade is code for push wages to the lowest possible level, destroy unions, gouge out whatever natural resources you can gouge out of the countries that you may or may not be sending in your military to occupy. So yeah, free trade is a lie. It doesn't exist. Just like the right wing pigs say, freedom isn't free. Well, that certainly operates in free trade, right?
I'll let you get to your next caller. Have a good evening.
All right, thanks, John. Appreciate it. I think about throw the bums out. I don't know. That's a great idea when you're dealing with political parties and candidates who may have strayed from the path, or may have pissed you off, or pissed off an entire state or something. But the people that are running this country now, either running it with their incompetence, like the Democrats, or running it with their intransigent refusal to say yes to anything, like these filthy Republicans, these are people that are not interested in the country. Nancy Pelosi made it very clear that the Constitution, as George Bush said, was just a goddamn piece of paper. She was given every single tool necessary to impeach both Dick Cheney and George W. Bush, and then, if possible, put together a military tribunal to hold them responsible for war crimes. You know, these right wingers talk about military tribunals like it's the greatest thing since socks without holes in them. Well, all right, the commander in chief of some of the most horrendous atrocities and violations of international law was George W. Bush and his cohort Dick Cheney. Those two sons of bitches should have been put on trial for war crimes after they were impeached. Pelosi said no. So to hell with the Democratic Party. Just to hell with the Democratic Party. They had their chance. Throw the bums out would be, a bunch of senators or representatives got slack or stole some money. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about two political parties that have goddamn near destroyed the United States. One of them through inaction and cowardice, that would be the Democrats. The other, because they are proto-fascists, and that would be the Republicans. They are the type, or neo-fascists, I'm sorry. They are the type that want to destroy everything that good people in society have worked for the past 75, 80 years. Everything. Throw the bums out doesn't work. What works is give the bums the whole system. Just give it to them. Let these rancid right-wingers have it. Give it to them. This is not Germany in the 20s or 30s. There won't be death camps here. The majority of the American population is armed, some of us heavily. Give it to the Republicans. And as they start to go ahead and utterly destroy and turn this country into a theocratic fascist state, I think there are millions of us who say, okay, it's time. And all those guns, all that weaponry that a lot of us have been stockpiling for a number of years, and some of you clowns were stockpiling it because you thought some liberal, you thought some liberal was good. Everybody that fought in the revolution was a liberal, you bunch of jerks. And you'll come out of the ether at some point. When the day comes when there is no Glenn Beck, no Rush Limbaugh, no Sean Hannity, no Bill O'Reilly, none of these scum suckers who lie through their teeth and completely invert language, when the day comes that those voices are no longer out there to be heard, I think you're going to come out of the ether and realize exactly what they've done to all of us, including you, Mr. Conservative. So as far as throw the bums out, nah, not me. I believe give it to the bums. Let them have it. And by the bums, I mean the real bastards in this country, and that's the conservatives. Give it to them. And when all of a sudden these teabaggers don't get their Social Security check anymore, or they don't get their Medicare money anymore, or all of a sudden the roads that they drive on to go see their doctors come crumbling down, or they're sold off by corporate America to some foreign operation that now charges them $10 a mile to go someplace, then... And that's just a lousy Picayune example. When it really starts getting rough because of these right-wing fascists, then maybe, rank-and-file America will realize that the enemy was never liberalism. It was never progressivism. It has always been conservatism. And then maybe... something will happen. And then again, maybe not. And if it doesn't, then fine. If this country is to die with a whimper, let the goddamn thing die. It's that simple. So throw the bums out. Give it to the bums. And historical events will take care of what happens next. My mind. James is in Greenwood, South Carolina. Hey, James.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm a long-time listener.
Uh-huh.
Yes, sir. I was sitting here thinking about what I was going to talk to you about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was thinking, you know, when I think about the future, I always think about the television show that really influenced me as a kid,
mm-hmm.
and that was Star Trek, you know.
Uh-huh.
It really influenced my progressive way of, you know, thinking about the world,
mm-hmm.
you know, about a future where people get along, there's no poverty and war, and all that, and I was wondering, do you think that actually might one day come true?
Well, there's a difference between thinking it might come true and hoping it would. Given what I have learned from, you know, just reading history, whether it was in school or not, no, I don't think that human beings are capable of the kind of empathy that's needed when there's so many of us. You know, the population of the planet is moving towards 10 billion. Where are we now? It's 7? 6.5? 7? And I literally can remember when I was a kid, young kid, teachers in elementary school telling us that the population of the Earth was soon going to reach 2 billion. So in my lifetime, I've seen it triple. And I think that has put, I don't know how much of a strain that's put on natural resources. I know it certainly put a strain on the ability of this planet to absorb the waste that we produced. But I think what it's done, it's made us incapable of empathy. Not that we were empathetic when there was only 500 million of us on the planet. We were slaughtering each other even back then. But that's why I say, given the history of everything, no, I don't think human beings at this level of our evolution are capable of the kind of empathy or sympathy or willingness to work together, whether it requires understanding of the other or respect for the other. I just don't think we have it, James. I really don't. Now, I do hope that that kind of emotional or spiritual mechanism can develop in us. Religion is not spiritual. Religion is vicious. It's vile. It's full of hate, mistrust, deceit. And so we certainly don't need more religion. But I think if there were was focus on the spiritual nature of a human being, even if that is nothing more than a construct, it's probably a pretty good construct. And if we got away from cloud beings and Christian soldiers and Jews for Jesus and Hindus that'll slaughter the nearest Muslim, and yeah, you know what I'm saying. Just get away from religion. Religion is part of the problem. I really do believe as long as there's religion on this earth, there will never, ever, 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 ever be any kind of empathy or brotherly love. It's impossible. Impossible. Thanks, James. Don't mean to make it sound real negative because, you know, one always has hope. You know, I mentioned this earlier this week or last week. the hope that I have is based on the idea that some phenomenon, whether it is an intervention that we can't even conceive of right now or development of some technology that all of a sudden frees everybody from the daily drudge of trying to take care of oneself and one's family, whatever it is, if there is some phenomenological event that occurs that is so profound and gets the attention on such a deep level of human beings. It could be something that's locked up inside of us that we just haven't figured out how to get to yet. That's where I put my hope. But as far as thinking that human beings will ever evolve beyond this butt-level consciousness that we've been at for, you know, what, 60,000 years? No, I don't think that's, I don't think it's going to happen. I really don't. But that doesn't preclude hope. That's the long-winded answer. I'm sorry it took so long to get that said. All right, we don't have enough time to take another phone call, so because we only have about 15 seconds left here. But anyway, take care. I heard on the news tonight that for the first time in the history of, I don't know, history of something, or maybe they just said the first time ever, as far as the United States is concerned, there, with the exception of Hawaii, every single state, the other 49, in other words, has snow on the ground. And, of course, the crazy people in the right-wing fringe will say, "Say global warming." No, no, no. That's absolute proof of global climate change. Remember, snow is not an indication of cold. It's an indication of moisture, for God's sake. I'll see you Monday night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. So che sei con me, tu mia luna, tu sei con me.